Chapter 1. Tidying. The wagon bounced along the west road, the coffin, tied down as it was, still managing to grumble and bang, so much like the battle rager it carried. They had collected Thibbledorf Puent for his final journey. Penelope Harple and Catty Bree drove the wagon, with Drizzt astride his magical unicorn, Andahar, close beside them. They were bound for Gauntlegrim after 4 10-days spent in Longsaddle, where they had dropped old Kipper and the other Harples who had helped King Brunner retake and secure the dwarven homeland. They could have used some sort of a teleport to bring the Battle Rager's body home to Gauntlegrim, but the winter of the Year of the Rune Lords Triumphant, or 1487 by Dale Reckoning, had broken early, and so they had decided to take an easy ride instead. Besides, big changes were afoot in the north, so it was said, with upheavals in Waterdeep and grumblings that Lord Neverember had angered more than King Brunner with his blustery ways.
"I miss him," Catty Bree said to Penelope on the second morning out from Longsaddle.
Drizzt had urged his unicorn ahead to scout, leaving the two women alone. The auburn-haired woman glanced back over her shoulder and cast a wistful grin.
"I did not know him much in the latter days of his life. I saw him not at all, alive at least in these years of my rebirth. And still I cannot but feel a sense of loss with him back there in that box. Never a more loyal friend than Thibbledorf Puent, so claims King Brunner," Penelope replied, and she put a comforting hand on Catty Bree's forearm.
"So he truthfully claims," said Catty Bree.
"Puent would have caught a ballista spear flying for any of us. His life was to serve.
A good life, then, if after all these years you still feel the pang of loss at his passing."
"I do."
She gave a helpless little chuckle.
"It is a strange thing of this second life, I know. Many of those dearest to me are here again. My beloved husband, the companions of the hall. But still there are times when I feel out of place, as if the world I knew has been left behind, and this new world is meant not for me, but for those who have yet to write their tales."
"You are half my age," Penelope reminded her.
"There is a large book in front of you, dear Catty Bree, and one with half the pages yet blank."
Catty Bree laughed again and nodded.
"It just feels strange sometimes, out of place."
"I understand."
"What does?" Drizzt asked, riding back to join them.
"The world," said Penelope. "Particularly you," Catty Bree teased.
"It would seem as if I have missed a profound discussion," Drizzt said, falling into line beside the wagon. "One worthy of repeating."
"Not really," Catty Bree said. "Just the lament of a silly young woman."
"Bah, but you're not so young," Drizzt teased, and Catty Bree shot him a phony glare.
"We were discussing the books we write of our lives," Penelope explained. "It would seem that Catty Bree has a few chapters to add."
Drizzt nodded. "I understand," he said. And he did indeed. "We have just climbed a great mountain in reclaiming Gauntlegrim. The scope of that achievement remains hard to fathom. Perhaps now is the time to let out our breath and to wonder what the next great adventure might be." Catty Bree and Penelope exchanged a glance then, tipping the drow off.
"So you are plotting your course," Drizzt said.
"We know what we must do,"
Penelope said seriously.
"The host tower?"
"It must be rebuilt, or Gauntlegrim will prove a short-lived victory," said Catty Bree. "There is no doubt that without the power of the ancient magic delivering the water elementals to the prison, the fiery primordial will soon enough break free. The resulting eruption will ruin Brunner's kingdom, and what else? Will Neverwinter again be buried under a mountain of ash, water deep perhaps?"
"You know this?"
"I know this."
Catty Bree held up her hand to display the ring of elemental command that Drizzt had taken from the body of the drow wizard, Brakthalsor Laren, and given to her.
"How long do we have?"
"A decade."
She didn't seem very certain. "And how long to rebuild the host tower of the Arcane?" Drizzt asked. "Can you even hope to accomplish such a task? Is the magic still understood? Do the spells remain to access? It was built many ages ago, by all that I have heard. And we have since passed the time of troubles, the spell plague, the reign of Abir."
"I do not know," Catibree bluntly admitted.
"We cannot know until we begin," Penelope added. "But all of the Ivy Mansion will join in as we can. We will open our library and cast our spells as needed."
"We cannot know the course until the first stones are reassembled,"
Catibree agreed. "You cannot know that you will know the course even then," said Drizzt, and the women had no rebuke for that logic. They were in wholly unexplored territory here, dealing with magic that the world had not seen in millennia.
"We will find assistance from many quarters," Penelope replied. "Your friend Jarlaxle controls the city, and he understands the urgent need for this. He believes, too, that rebuilding the host tower will serve his own needs."
"The Harples will ally with Bregan the Earth?"
"Jarlaxle allied with Brunner,"
Catibree reminded him. Drizzt started a reply, but bit it back and just heaved a confused sigh instead. What else might be said of Jarlaxle other than a confused sigh, after all? Once again, Jarlaxle had saved Drizzt's life when Doomwheel, wielding Kazitea, had mortally wounded him. Surely the level of Jarlaxle's involvement in securing the forge and the lower levels of Gauntlegrim went well beyond what the friends had witnessed and could not be understated. Jarlaxle had convinced House Sorlaren that to wage war against Brunner's legion would not serve them well. And had he not done so, how many dwarves would have gone to their graves under the barrage of Sorlaren magic?
"I expect that Jarlaxle will provide great insight," Drizzt had to admit. "He has contacts across Faerun and beyond. He consorts with dragons. Likely he will prove to be your greatest resource in this journey." Again, the two women exchanged a look, and Drizzt stared at them curiously.
"He will be valuable, but more so will be the Archmage Gromf Beanri, I expect," said Catibree.
Drizzt felt as if he would simply slide off Andahar's side and crumble to the ground.
"Gromf Beanri?" he mouthed in reply.
"He has lived more than 8 centuries, and has ready access to, and intimate knowledge of, spells that were long forgotten before the time of troubles even. Is there anyone in the realms, save perhaps Elminster himself, wherever he might be, more prepared for such a task as this?"
"He is Beanri," Drizzt said evenly, as if that should be enough, and normally it most certainly would be.
"He is indebted to Jarlaxle, and cannot return to Menzo Berenzon. Or so said Jarlaxle, though I know not why."
Drizzt had heard as much. He tried to focus on those truths and set aside his deeper fears, fears of House Beanri that every dark elf who was not Beanri had judiciously whipped into him from his earliest days.
"You really intend to pursue this?" he asked at length.
"I have no choice."
"You have every choice," Drizzt insisted.
"This is a Beanri, and a wizard beyond the power of all but a very few. Elminster himself would deal carefully with the likes of Archmage Gromf Beanri. He is drow through and through, and he is Beanri through and through, and so not to be trusted." "He needs Jarlaxle.
For now. But that may change, and if it does, what will it concern Gromf to destroy you, all of you, and take the tower for his own?"
"He can have the tower as his own," Catibree retorted, "as long as the magic is flowing to Gondolgrim to keep the beast in its pit."
"And what blackmail might Gromf demand of King Brunner when such power as that is in his control?" Drizzt asked.
The responding expressions, winces of discomfort from both, showed that the two were well aware of that possibility.
"Jarlaxle will prevent that," Catibree said.
"Jarlaxle has little power over the Archmage of Menzo Berenzon."
"What choice do we have?" Catibree yelled back at Drizzt. "What choice, my love?
Or do we abandon this quest, and so abandon Gontalgrim, and so let the primordial roar forth once more to lay devastation about the Sword Coast?
Drizzt didn't really have an answer to that. Jarlaxle has assured us that Gromp's position is compromised right now, Penelope added. This will be to Gromp's benefit as well, and he is pragmatic above all else. And Luskin is fully under Jarlaxle's control. Even Gromp does not dispute that. Would the Archmage deem it worthwhile to do battle with the whole of Jarlaxle's band?
Drizzt was hardly listening by that point, his stare locked by Catti Bree, the woman silently pleading with him to trust her with these decisions. And Drizzt knew that he should. Catti Bree's understanding of what needed to be done was much greater than anything he might discern. But he feared that she did not as well understand the webs of the drow, how easily she might be caught in those ultimately sticky filaments, and how difficult it would be to ever escape.
Any guilt you might feel is surely misplaced. If it hadn't been you, it would have been someone else, Jarlaxle remarked to Gromp when he caught up to the Archmage in a suite of rooms Gromp had taken as his own in Illusk, the ancient undercity buried beneath the common graveyard of Luskin. Gromp arched an eyebrow at the mercenary, his expression uncertain but certainly not appreciative.
We have word of other demon lords walking the ways of the Underdark, Jarlaxle explained. Zuktmoy, the Lady of Fungi, is rumored to be holding court among a large gathering of Myconids. Orcus is said to be about, as is Grast. The Underdark is less inviting than before, it would seem, and that is no small feat.
Rumors, Gromp muttered, denying the premise. That made sense to Jarlaxle and confirmed many of his suspicions. Gromp knew what he had done. The Archmage understood that his mighty spell had wrenched Demogorgon from the abyss, and in doing so had likely broken the protective planar barrier formed within the magic of the Faerez.
It would seem that your summoning was part of a larger invasion by the Abyssal Lords, Jarlaxle said.
Rumors!
Gromp emphatically roared.
Have you considered that perhaps Demogorgon brought them forth?
He would not, Jarlaxle replied, shaking his head resolutely. No, there is something bigger afoot.
Concern yourself with the matters of Luskin, Jarlaxle, Gromp warned, his voice ominous and threatening. Leave the greater truths to those of greater understanding.
Jarlaxle bowed at that, as much to hide his knowing grin as to mollify his volatile brother.
What is that creature you claim as a peer? Gromp demanded.
The one you consider your tutor, Jarlaxle thought, but very wisely did not say.
Seeking answers, I would hope.
In the abyss. Jarlaxle nearly laughed out loud.
Where Camoriel always seeks his answers, he replied. At the hive mind, of course. The Illithids know everything in the multiverse if one is to believe Camoriel.
Bring him to me.
Jarlaxle's expression grew doubtful.
I wish to speak with him, Gromp added.
Bring him here as soon as you can.
Of course, Jarlaxle replied. Though, of course, he had no intention of doing any such thing. Camoriel had gone to the hive mind of the Illithids to search for answers, and that was no place Jarlaxle ever intended to visit. But the psionicist had also gone there, post-haste, to get away from Gromp. Jarlaxle hadn't pieced it all together yet, but he was quite suspicious that Camoriel had played more than a little role in the disaster Gromp had brought about by inadvertently summoning Demogorgon to Menzo Berenzon. It might prove beneficial to keep Camoriel at the hive mind for the time being in any case, and not just for Camoriel's own sake. If any race in the multiverse could aid in rediscovering the magic that had created the host tower of the Arcane, it would be the Illithids. Time itself, the passing of millennia even, seemed no barrier to those strange creatures and their vast repository of knowledge.
Perhaps Camoriel will garner some information as to how we might be rid of the demon lords, Jarlaxle offered, and that too was an honest hope.
Demon lord,
Grumph corrected. We know of one, Demogorgon. The rest is speculation, even if it is just one, Jarlaxle conceded with a shrug. And that one alone was catastrophe on a monumental scale. Who was going to remove Demogorgon, the prince of demons, from the Underdark? Not Grumph, who had fled the scene screaming and tearing at his own eyes. Not Jarlaxle, who had no intention of doing battle with any demon lord. Jarlaxle was quite enamored of his current life. You will tell me everything Kamoria learns, the Archmage said at length. And when he returns, you will deliver him to me immediately. Deliver him? Jarlaxle shrugged and offered a meek smile. What? Grumph demanded. Kamoriel is a leader of Bregan D'Earth, dear Grumph, and as such he is free to make his own choices, Jarlaxle explained. I will inform him of your desire to speak with him, but... Grumph's nostrils flared, and for a heartbeat, Jarlaxle feared that he might have gone a bit too far in his overt backtracking. But Grumph quickly calmed. No doubt he reminded himself that he needed Bregan D'Earth right now more than they needed or feared him. Jarlaxle could get word of Grump's whereabouts to Matron Mother Bayenry very quickly, after all. And the mercenary leader had a good idea that Quenthal and Grumph were not on particularly good terms at this time. I wish to speak with him, Grumph said calmly. Perhaps it would help if you would tell me why, Jarlaxle offered. Perhaps I might burn my explanation onto your naked back and leave you face down and dead on the floor for Kamoriel to read. A simple no would have sufficed. Jarlaxle doesn't take no for an answer. The mercenary leader snorted, and he shrugged, tipped his hat in concession, and walked away, muttering as he made his way through the haunted corridors of Illusk. Now he knew, without doubt, that Grumph blamed Kamoriel for Demogorgon. Ah, my tentacle-loving friend, what have you done? Jarlaxle asked himself. But the question carried back no answers in its echoes. The primordial chamber had been fully redone in the time Drizzt and Catti Bree had been away from Gontalgrim. The altar block used by Matron Mother Xerath had been efficiently removed by a team of dwarves, Brunner centering them, who had merely pushed it into the pit to be devoured by the primordial beast. The webs were gone, the giant jade spiders rudely dismantled, and jade jewelry was all the rage in Gontalgrim. Another table, more a bathtub, rested where the drow altar had been, this one bound in mithril as if it were some altar for Brunner's homeland. Though, of course, any altar shaped like a bathtub seemed out of place in a dwarven chapel. Still, in a sense, it was just that. The metal tub had been placed there for the most reverent and somber of circumstances, to commit the dead to their unique coffins. Below the tub, the dwarves had dug a narrow tunnel. Using a mithril drill and crank, they had driven the channel deep into the stone, angling it toward the primordial pit, where it had broken out just below the swirl of the water elementals. Heavy plugs had been bolted into place. The primordial would not get up through this shaft unless called upon. They laid Thibbledorf Puent out to rest in that bowl, and Catti Bree began her work, covering Puent in the special shroud, one heavy with metals that would strengthen the lava. Her assistant dwarves removed the tunnel plug, and the priestess reached through her ring to coax the beast forth. The process would take a full day of labor, bringing forth a bit of lava, magically easing it into place and then summoning the next molten spurt. It was painstaking and heavy work, but Catti Bree did not tire and paid attention to every last detail. This was Puent, once her friend and dear to her Da, and she considered this work to be as much a piece of art as a sarcophagus. Have you told him yet? A voice asked late in the day, startling her when she thought she was alone. She spun to see Jarlaxle standing in front of her. I apologize for surprising you, the mercenary leader said, bowing low. He walked over and peered into the tub. It is beautiful, a fitting tribute to a most heroic dwarf. Catti Bree's first instinct was to snap at the uninvited drow. What would he know of Thibaldorf Puent's true heroism after all? But she bit it back and reminded herself that Jarlaxle had been a major player in the fight in Gontalgrim those decades ago when Puent had fallen to his state of undeath. The mercenary drow and his dwarf companion Athrogate had come into Gontalgrim with Brunner and Drizzt to put the primordial back in its pit. Jarlaxle had witnessed the fight when Puent and Brunner had defeated not only a pit fiend, but the vampire that had ultimately infected Puent. Jarlaxle had been a hero to Brunner that day, no doubt.
"How did you find me? How did you get in here?"
Catty Bree asked, but not sharply. She glanced about, her gaze settling on the lava-filled antechamber across the way, where Archmage Gromph had set up his teleportation room.
"I have a friend who told me where to find you," Jarlaxle replied. "He let me in."
"Drizzt?"
"Shorter," the drow replied, winking the eye that was not covered by a patch.
"Athrogate," Catty Bree said, shaking her head.
"Athrogate was supposed to be putting Brunner ahead of you. So it's not to be, then? Midai will be interested in that bit of news now, won't he?"
"Pray don't tell him. Athrogate understood my purpose, and so he thought allowing me in here to be the best course in serving King Brunner's interests, given the current situation."
Catty Bree nodded for him to continue.
"You haven't told King Brunner?"
The woman sighed.
"It's not so easy a thing to tell a dwarf king that his newly reclaimed kingdom will soon be destroyed."
"Then perhaps we should not allow that to happen."
"It is daunting," the woman admitted.
"You have Gromph Beanry."
"Archmage Gromph, the Harples, my own powers, will any of it, will all of it be nearly enough? The host tower was physically obliterated, and its magic is older than any living memory."
"That is not necessarily true," Jarlaxle replied. "And I have a few more avenues we may search to find greater clues. Life is daunting, my dear girl, but it is also wondrous, is it not?"
Catty Bree looked at him incredulously.
"Yes, I am in a fine mood," Jarlaxle added. "And believe me, your course is not the most daunting before me right now, nor the most dangerous."
"Perhaps you should find a place to rest."
"Perhaps I love the adventure."
"And the danger?"
Jarlaxle smiled.
"Do you mean to be beside me when I tell King Brunner?"
Catty Bree asked.
"If you would allow it."
"I would welcome it."
Jarlaxle's smile was genuine. In that moment, it occurred to them both that there was nothing out of place with Jarlaxle being allowed unescorted into this room. He was indeed a friend of the king, and of them all.
"Let me gather the dwarves so they can bring Puent to his resting place in the audience chamber,"
Catty Bree said.
"They have to place him and properly pose him before the stone hardens fully."
"First, though, I believe our black-bearded friend awaits you beside the great forge," Jarlaxle said. "He said that he has something for you, and more importantly, that you have something for him."
Catty Bree nodded and grinned, and moved over to her pack, producing a heavy leather girdle that Jarlaxle had seen before, and with recognition the mercenary drow's eyes widened indeed.
"His belt?"
"Athrogate let me borrow it these last 10 days, the woman explained.
"You had something heavy to lift?" Jarlaxle quipped. He understood the magic of that belt, which offered great physical strength to the wearer.
"To study it in Luskin," Catty Bree replied with a laugh.
Jarlaxle shook his head, hardly believing the sight in front of his eyes.
"He said he was a friend of King Brunner's, loyal to the last," Catty Bree reminded. "He took the oath of kith and kin more solemnly than any, so the whispers say."
"You mean to make such a girdle for Brunner?" the mercenary asked.
"You are capable of making such a girdle?"
Clear excitement filled Jarlaxle's voice with that second question, as if he were seeing some real possibilities. But Catty Bree laughed those away.
"Someday, perhaps," she said. "But no, a girdle of this quality is rare, and filled with an older magic I fear broken by the spell plague.
The spell plague is gone.
But the weave is not fully regained, and the art of the time before is, well, this is our trial in trying to rebuild the host tower.
Jarlaxle conceded that, and preceded Caddybree into the forge room, where Athrogate stood waiting by the great forge of Gauntlegrim. How his face brightened when Caddybree handed him back his magical girdle, which he wasted no time in securing about his ample waist.
And for me? Caddybree asked.
Already in the oven? The dwarf explained. You got your spells ready?
Caddybree nodded and motioned to the glowing oven, and Athrogate gathered up his tongs, set the heavy leather apron over his head, and leaned in. Jarlaxle watched it all from behind, and his curiosity only heightened when the dwarf pulled forth and quickly dipped in the water trough a mithril piece, octagonal and about the size of Jarlaxle's palm. Athrogate drew it back out and held it up in front of Caddybree's eyes, the woman already deep in spellcasting. A blue mist curled out of the sleeves of her multicolored, shimmering blouse. Jarlaxle edged closer, trying to get a better look.
A belt buckle, he whispered under his breath.
He noted a carving on its face of a bow, and one that looked like a tiny image of Tol Maril the Heartseeker, once Caddybree's bow but now carried by Drizzt. Caddybree finished her spell and raised her hand to touch the item, and when she did, a blue spark burst forth, sizzling in the air, and the woman fell back.
Supposed to do that, is it? Athrogate asked.
I hope, Caddybree said with a laugh. She bit it back quickly, though, and turned to Jarlaxle. If you tell him, you and I will have a problem, she warned.
Tell him? Tell who?
And tell him what?
The woman smiled and nodded.
Good,
she said, and took the buckle from Athrogate and dropped it into her pouch.
Did you get the rest?
The blood? Aye, Amber's got it. She'll get it to you shortly.
The blood? Jarlaxle asked.
The less you know, the better the chances that we will remain friends, Caddybree pointedly told him.
She pointed to the other end of the room, where the solemn procession of dwarves had begun. The trio fell in with them as they made their way to the highest level of the complex. They found Drizzt in the throne room, then went with him to find King Brunner in his upper war room not far away. He was meeting with Ragged Dane, Orethio Spikes, the Fellhammer sisters, and the other dwarf commanders around a table set with a detailed map of the complex.
Ah, time for a ceremony, then, Brunner said upon seeing them.
Caddybree held up her hand.
Not just yet, me da, she replied. Might we be speaking with ye?
Brunner glanced all around and nodded.
Aye.
Alone, Caddybree asked.
Brunner glanced around again.
It is about the hole, then?
The woman nodded.
Then here and now, Brunner said, motioning for the other dwarves to rest easy. Any word of the hall is a word for all gathered to hear. We're four clans in one here, aye?
Aye,
said Shugel Grunions of Mirabar, who led the Mirabaran members of Brunner's new kingdom. The others all nodded, as did Caddybree's companions. They had to know, after all, and better if they knew before they began emptying the halls of Mirabar, Adbar, Felbar, and Mithril Hall, as more and more flocked to the Delzoon homeland of Gauntlegrim.
We intend to rebuild the host tower of the Arcane in Luskan, Caddybree stated.
Aye, ye've been whispering as much, Brunner replied.
Archmage Gromph has agreed to aid us, Jarlaxle added. Brunner didn't seem overly pleased by that.
Your city, he said. Do what ye will. But be warned, Drow, if you're thinking of rebuilding the tower as part of some plan to make me beholden.
We're rebuilding it to save Gauntlegrim, Caddybree blurted. Only for that.
Eh?
Brunner and several others all said together.
The power of the host tower brings forth the water elementals, the woman explained. Only their combined power keeps the beast in its pit.
Aye, and they're swirling thick in there, Brunner replied.
The residual magic is strong, Caddybree explained. but it is only that residual, and already it is thinning.
What are you saying?
Ragged Dane asked breathlessly.
Catty Bree took a deep breath and was glad indeed when Drizzt squeezed her hand. If we canno rebuild the host tower and bring forth its magic once more, you're not to have many years in Gontalgrim. The magic will diminish and the water elementals will sweep away.
And then the beast is free, said Drizzt. And we have seen that before.
Brunner grumbled indecipherably. He looked as if he was chewing on a pile of sharp rocks.
How many years?
He finally asked, and all eyes turned to Catty Bree.
I dunno know, she replied. Less than your life, to be sure, and sure and less than me own.
And ye know this?
Aye.
Because the beast tell ye?
More than just that, but I.
And so ye'll fix the derned tower,
Ragged Dane stated more than asked. Catty Bree kept looking at Brunner.
Well,
the King of Gontalgrim finally asked her.
We are going to try, good King Brunner, Jarlaxle unexpectedly interjected. Between your daughter and the Harples and all the forces I can muster, we will try.
And what's your play in this? Brunner demanded.
You know my stake in Luskan. I have not hidden that from you. So you're thinking the volcano'd blow that way, are ye?
I have no idea. And suspect that Luskan is far enough out of its reach in any event,
Jarlaxle replied.
And no, I'll not deny that rebuilding the host tower will be of great benefit to me, and in part because it will keep you here in Gontalgrim, and that, good dwarf king, I prefer.
Brunner looked for a moment as if he would question that claim, but he rocked back on his heels and let it go with a nod.
But to do this, we will need your help, Jarlaxle added. Send 1,000 of your best builders to the City of Sails, I beg, that we can put them to use in physically reconstructing the host tower.
1,000? Bruno balked. We got walls to build here,
Orethio Spikes protested.
Aye, and tunnels yet to secure,
added Ragged Dane.
And to what point might we be doing that, if the damned volcano's to blow?
Malabritch's fellhammer set above them all, and indeed that quieted the ruckus before it could gather momentum.
You're asking me to walk 1,000 of me boys into a city of pirates and drow, Brunner said.
I will guarantee their safety, of course. Indeed, I will build barracks and all accommodations right there on Cutlass Island, which cannot be reached by land except by going through Close Guard Island, upon which sits the fortress of High Captain Kurth.
Your boy?
Jarlaxle confirmed that with a nod. Brunner looked around the room, and each dwarf in turn came to nod his or her agreement.
And we might find that we will need more than 1,000. Jarlaxle warned.
Brunner's nostrils flared, but Catty Bree interjected.
If we fail in this, you will have no halls worth defending, not here at least. But if we succeed, she added, as the dwarves began to grumble, the primordial is secure, and we will understand so much more of the magic that built Gontalgrim. It might well be that the host tower is the secret to getting the magical gates up and running, too.
That ended the meeting on an upbeat tone, as Catty Bree had hoped. But by the time Brunner and the other dwarves emerged from the war room into the throne room for the ceremony committing Puent's statue, they wore dour expressions once again. Brunner went right to the throne and hopped upon it, settling back with his hairy chin in his hand as he stared at the sarcophagus of Thibeldorf Puent being set in its final, heroic pose on the wall a dozen strides away, about 10 feet above the floor on a shelf the dwarves had carved. From there, Puent would look over the hall, a guardian just above the fray, overlooking and protecting his king. King Brunner did gain some comfort from that sight, and was comforted too by the sensations of the godly throne. He had the distinct feeling, as clear as a whisper in his ear, that the sentient spirits within the throne of the dwarven gods agreed with his decision to aid in the reconstruction of the host tower. Between that and looking at Puent, Brunner felt strangely calm given the shock of this day's news. He knew that he was not alone here, and that his friends,
even including Jarlaxle, were no small matter. He let other dwarves speak of Puent at the dedication, and hardly listened. He did not need to hear tales of Thibbledorf Puent to know the truth of that most wonderful shield dwarf. When they were done, Brunner brought the cracked silver horn up to his lips on impulse and blew a discordant note, summoning the battle-raging specter of Puent. As always, when there was no enemy apparent, the defending spirit hopped about wildly, scouring every shadow and nook. The others thought nothing of it and turned their attention to Brunner, who led them in a toast to Puent. Except for Jarlaxle, who watched the spirit and noted that this thing, supposedly unconnected to Thibbledorf Puent's actual spirit and soul, supposedly a simple and little-thinking manifestation of a bodyguard, paused and let its stare linger on the sarcophagus statue that had just been set on the wall. And in those nearly translucent eyes, Jarlaxle noted something. Recognition?